Hey, everyone, and welcome to part two of my Leaning Post Wine interview with the winemakers, with the co-founders, Ilya and Nadia Senchuk. And again, really appreciate everyone listening. I'm sure you enjoyed part one. You'll love part two. It gets emotional in it. Some really cool wines, this great Syrah and Cab Franc. And I did mean it. Like, at some point in this interview, I say to them, I want to rip one of the wines. Because, you know, if you love everything, it feels like, you know, you're not really truly appreciating it, or you're being too nice, and then how can you be objective? But all these wines are really good. Like, they follow a very proper wine philosophy, and the viticulture and vinification, everything about it. Like, they make these wines the right way. I'm shocked it took me so long to get a hold of Leaning Post. It's certainly a winery that was a bit of a blank spot for me. It's just a winery I just didn't know as well. Anyway, so here is part two. Again, part one ended with their relationship. If you missed it, part one ends with a relationship that they have with some of their most loyal customers. Part two, which we're going to kick off right now, all about the tough days.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
What were the toughest moments like for you guys the first couple of years, beyond your mother giving you movie recommendations?
Well, it was interesting, for sure.
We did silly things. Like, I was, I don't know how many months pregnant, probably 5 months pregnant, taking down a barn, because we don't come from money bag parents where they gave us a whole bunch. It was just kind of blood, sweat, and tears that got us there. And then, you know, we slowly had the ability to hire someone, and then it was the three of us, and then it was the four of us, and now it's the 10 of us kind of doing this.
Actually, I think this summer is going to be 12 of us. Yeah. And then, I mean, I don't know what's crazier is the initial thing we did, where we kind of fixed up the barn and did all that over years. Or then we did this big expansion that we're sitting in now with, you know, a whole addition. We basically doubled the size of our building, this whole thing. And that we broke ground on in the end of January 2020. as usual, our timing was impeccable. We did our big expansion. The entire expansion was basically during COVID. We had 5 weeks, and then it was the original shutdown. And then we somehow managed to get a new sort of new winery building built, new tasting studio, the whole thing, through the worst parts of COVID with lockdowns and everything. So that was pretty crazy. Three kids on online school.
Wow.
There was a lot of wine consumed.
Yes.
But I mean, that's what it we did whatever it took, because we were all in. And every single time, it just always felt like we were kind of jumping off a cliff, starting our label, buying the property, building stuff. It just, every time it was like, you know, yes, you, but we had this faith, we had this belief in ourselves, and like, I don't know. When you believe that strongly in something, shit's got to work out for you.
Well, it has so far. All right, let's talk about the two Pinots.
All right.
2021, different vineyard, Bock Vineyard. I see St. David's Bench. That's closer to like Niagara Falls, Niagara-on-the-Lake.
Yeah. So the reason I like pouring these, I love doing those two Shards and then these two Pinots, because they are like polar opposites. So the Bock Vineyard is, honestly, it almost could not be closer to the other end of Niagara and still be in St. David's Bench. Mm-hmm. So this is the Pinot that we make that is the furthest away from our vineyard.
Right.
So I love that. Like, the Chardonnays are like the closest to, and then here we're literally from one end of Niagara to the other. Bock Vineyard is less than 2K from the Niagara River and the American border. And then we're all the way at the west end of Niagara here, right kind of on the border of Hamilton and Grimsby. So I really love showing these because it's much warmer at Bock Vineyard and just a completely different soil type, really kind of clay. Ours is kind of this beautiful kind of like silty mix. And I really think, especially in 21, you can really see that sort of heat difference between the two wines. It's not a numbers game. Like, they both have the same amount of alcohol, all that kind of stuff. In the way that the Bock is really like fruity, pretty, right, kind of in your face, all kinds of like cherry, kirsch, leafy kind of things. Maybe my favorite tasting note, everybody will appreciate this, tamako. So it's a good Simpsons reference. Yep. But also it's tomato leaf and tobacco kind of rolled into one. Our vineyard is all like tightness and focus, you know, higher acidity, really powerful center, really actual like dirt and beets and all that kind of stuff. So they're just structurally and in every way built completely differently.
I always love when Ilya's like, so what do I want in a wine? Like when I'm building a wine, I want power. I want delicacy and refined. I want fruit. I want non-fruit. Can I just have it all?
Yeah.
And that's what we're really trying to do with these Pinots, that this is like, especially Centric Vineyard, is the kind of wine that you can sit over an entire evening with the bottle and go, oh my God, are you getting that now? Like, you know, it's really cool how it unfolds in the glass in front of you. And it's a wine that we're really proud of. It's our backyard.
21 was a tougher year than 20.
Definitely. So all the Ontario winemakers will appreciate this. We definitely have PTSD from 21 in terms of as a winemaker on the crush pad. It was absolutely crazy. I don't think I've worked that hard, honestly, as a winemaker in 22 vintages now, 23 vintages. Never worked that hard to make the wine. However, the amazing thing about 21 that we sometimes forget in all of that craziness is it wasn't a particularly cool vintage. It was long and difficult and hard to deal with, but we had lots of growing season. And if you were really, really choosy, you did all the right work, there were some really beautiful grapes and really beautiful wines there. And you can see these ones, like they're not about a whole bunch of alcohol or fatness, but they have flavor density and power in a way. And I think that is kind of not so secretly our superpower, because everybody is going to sort of, they want to have less alcohol. They want to have lighter things. And the amazing thing about Niagara wine, honestly, is we get all the same power you might expect from a place like Oregon, not so much California, but any cooler area, Oregon, Burgundy, cooler parts of the world, New Zealand, except we're 12.5 alcohol.
Right.
We're 13 alcohol, and the same amount of weight and flavor density, and maybe a point to a point and a half less alcohol. And so it's really, another great thing. Somebody actually in the UK said this to us, and he brings in Burgundy all the time. And he was just saying, you know, it's like Burgundy used to be before some global warming, like, because we're even finding, we were there actually last year, and we're finding some wines that are 14.5 alcohol out of sort of classic regions, out of Pinot.
Yeah. You can't do that on a Wednesday night.
No.
or most nights. Yeah. So the amazing thing about Niagara and just Ontario, Prince Edward County, like, I think we talk about finesse, but I think people think that's a euphemism for like light, and it's not. I always say that, like, the amazing, when Pinot is at its best, it is both light and powerful. It's just light in body, as in, like, the example I always give is Riesling and Sauvignon Blanc are lighter than Chardonnay, just as wines. But you would never say that they're lighter in flavor. They're just lighter in alcohol and body and maybe have more acid. And I feel the same way about Pinot generally. Like Pinot Noir, the reason it's a great grape is it's like all of the flavor in a Big Red in kind of a medium-sized package. And that is amazing to me. With lower alcohol, you can, and it's genuinely more drinkable, but you're not really sacrificing flavor. You're only kind of gaining complexity and kind of silkiness and softness and kind of medium weight.
Do you guys take more pride in the 21 than the 20? Just because 20, easier year, technically a little less work to make a wine up to your guys' standards, but to make wine, because these 20 ones are awesome. You know, you had to work harder for it, and yet the results are still there. Is there a higher level of pride, or do you love them all the same like your children?
No, I'm going to be honest. Yes, the answer is yes. No, I have more pride in the 21s for that reason. Yeah, it's not that the 20s were beautiful and amazing, but it's true. Like, I really think that's the opposite sort of year. That's the sort of year where you really had to get out of the way, as in, honestly, if you did it right, you didn't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. In 21, it was a crazy amount of work. So yeah, I'm really proud in that. And again, it goes back to our philosophy, though. I was saying, if you're honest about all the wines you make, then in every vintage and with enough work and putting the right things forward, you will end up with a wine where you're like, you know what? That is just as good as anything I've done. There's no drop in quality this year, but I got to be honest, maybe it's only this little bit of our vineyard, that's okay. That is the bit that really shows the best of our spot. And then, you know, you just kind of find that. And that's been the thing. Because even, again, 21 generally was an odd vintage around the world. There's actually a lot of places where 21 wasn't a great vintage overall. And then we're finding now we've got all these wines out and people are like, wow, there's like no drop in quality from your other ones. And I'm like, yeah, but the reason I'm proud is because, yeah, that was work and deliberate. Like,
right. Yeah, yeah.
We never want to put something out where somebody spends real money and then, oh, that was all right. Like, it's good for the year. we're like, no, it's not. It shouldn't be good for the year. It should be good because it's good inherently.
And I'm just gonna say, I'm proud of him. Like, I know, like when we say it was a lot of work, it all of a sudden at harvest, it was just rain, and it was trying to find the right time to pick, trying to figure out and salvage what we could. And you were picking through the best grapes and throwing a lot out. That, and I'm sorry, this is a year that is difficult, separates a good winemaker from a great winemaker. You know, I put in the work, I did what I needed to do, and like vindication at the end, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, so much of your world is about vindication. Getting into a Michelin star restaurant, having a American tourist who's skeptical and leaves with a case and a half. Vindication must be a big part. And I mean this in a positive way, not in a, I'm gonna prove everyone wrong and it can be mentally unstable, but more in a, like, there is, vindication's gotta be a big part of what you guys do.
So vindication is certainly there, but it's also excitement. It's, you know, like, yeah, we're doing our very first international winemakers dinner at a Michelin star restaurant in London next week. It's fucking cool.
Yeah. What are you pouring?
So yeah, some of these wines for sure that we've tried, the Senchuk Chard, Senchuk Pinot. One of the wines we're going to try after this, so our Cabernet Franc has a weirdly a little bit of a following in the UK as well. But yeah, I'll tip my hat to these guys. I mean, Trivet, amazing. They got 2 Michelin stars in London. But I'll tip my hat to them. They do have the Canada connection. Johnny Lake, the one of the owners, and he's the head chef. He is from Burlington, okay, Ontario. Yeah. So we've got the Canadian connection there, but he moved to UK 20 years ago. Amazing restaurant. And honestly, it was a really great story because we kind of reached out through our agent and just kind of said, look, we'd love to do a Canadian wine dinner. We've never done one in the UK. We actually didn't have the ego that we should do it ourselves. What we actually said was, look, we've got the big kind of Canada tasting. There's a bunch of us in town. Why don't we put together one with a group of us, like us and some of our friends. Let's put together an amazing dinner just celebrating Ontario or BC or whatever you want. And then they came back to us and were like, no, we really love you guys. Can you just bring a bunch of wine and we'll do it? And I was like, oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. That is really amazing. Issa, the Somme there, he's the one who kind of made that decision. I was like, that is awesome. I hope it works out, but we're really kind of humbled, but also proud. Like we try and, so we were talking about that before when we're saying, you know, it's our life. Like we just kind of, our biggest goal, especially after the craziness of COVID and all of this and tariffs, we just really want to make sure we're enjoying and celebrating whatever happens that is good instead of focusing on all the shit, because there's plenty of stuff that'll happen to everybody. And you could easily get bogged down with that.
What is your guys' relationship with the city of Hamilton? Because I think I read somewhere we're Hamilton's winery. All right, I think I saw something about that. You guys are. You're the closest vineyard I can think of that is so close to the city.
Yeah, we do pay our taxes to Hamilton. We are literally on the border of Grimsby and Hamilton, but we pay our taxes to Hamilton. I'll tell you actually a really funny story. When we first applied, so we had been used to working with all of the other towns in Niagara, so like Lincoln and Niagara and the Lake, and we knew that. And we went to the town, we knew how that worked. And then I went to the town to apply to like the whole thing, to be a winery, explain what we're doing, to get our permit, the whole thing. And I was literally like, we're applying and we want to convert this place to a winery. And they were like, what's a winery?
No. They said, oh, fantastic. Go talk to the Niagara Escarpment Commission. And We're like, no, we're on the other side of the road. Oh, we've never done that before.
Oh.
I don't know if you can do that. Well, show me why we can't.
Why couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, I love that. I think the city of Hamilton has had a lot of change in image over the last number of years. It's not just Steel Town. There was that whole marketing campaign of it's a city of waterfalls, and well, now it's a city of vineyards, right? And like we like to say, we're right next to the Peach Festival, the Winona Peach Festival. There's so much happening in Hamilton. We're proud to be from where we are.
By the way, off topic. Well, it's not off topic. The last sip I had of the Pinot before we move on, the Senchuk, the linger is still there. Like there's this perfumed dark clove fruit thing still going on a couple minutes later. That's a great wine.
Thank you. Yeah. That is the goal. I mean, I do, that part is what I spend a lot of my time obsessing on, honestly, is I think what takes a wine from good to great is kind of the back third of a wine. Almost anybody can make the front third of a wine. Finding a wine that is true to place, but then has an amazing, like, beautiful end and length and finish and lasts, is that's actually incredibly hard. And it's the part that, honestly, here, even if you spend like, you know, unfortunately for everybody who works here sometimes, I obsess as much over like our rosé, which is like $22 and make sure it has that as I do like a $70, $80 wine. But I feel like that's so important, even when people don't know or care. I think some people just notice if something's missing. Does that make sense? Rather than knowing the details. And I just really want to make sure that nobody's ever disappointed when they leave here.
Well, it's about, part of it's about trust. I can tell you, I'm a fan of Google. Who, I mean, who isn't?
Yeah.
It's such a stupid statement. Oh, you're the one who likes it. Yeah, no one likes Google.
Or Gaia.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Gaia. Nah, it's not bad.
That's all right.
Yeah, maybe I'll slum it. But what I always appreciate about Google was his Cote d'Aron, like his simple one, and just the amount of time and attention that went into that. And my thought is always, all right, if your $20 wine is this good, then I can trust that your high-end wine is going to be as well, because you're not ignoring the rosé ugly stepchild.
So the funny thing is that when we released the Centric Vineyard, it was at like $70. It was in the middle of COVID. Nobody could come. Nobody could taste it. And we're thinking to ourselves, how on earth is this going to work? But that trust was there.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh my God, if he thinks it's worth that much, holy crap, let's grab it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to talk about times where we were like, oh, I hope this works. I mean, imagine the stress of releasing a $70 Pinot with a Instagram video so, where nobody could come to your place to get it anyway.
No wine writer.
Yeah, yeah. We were like, oh, this is going to go well. This is great. So we were just like, honestly, this is where we all are. We're going to stand in our vineyard and tell you about why we think this wine is awesome. You know, the fact that anybody ordered it really off of that was amazing. We just thought, you know, so even if it's five people, those five people must really love it. And that and that was enough for us. That kind of kept us going in some of those weird times. And, you know, now it's been, you know, it's definitely grown since then even, but been really great.
And your Instagram, certainly, you guys have a good presence with that. You guys promote this. You promote when there's charity events or things like that. You guys always do a good job on the Instagram.
We try.
Yeah.
We try.
Yeah, it's that's a lot of fun. All right, so what do we got in our glass now?
So the next is the Kazan Vineyard Syrah. And I have so many amazing stories to tell about this wine. We started making this wine in 2012. And the first story is Ilio wanted to make Syrah. He'd been dreaming about making Syrah for the longest time. Finally found a grower who was willing to sell Les Kazan. And then he said, okay, yeah, sure. Ilio, yeah, you can have the Syrah. And then the next day he called back and he said, you know what, Ilio, I'm sorry. I have my whole farm to sell. I can't give it to you. Everybody's calling with the Syrah. Nobody wants anything else. So if they're willing to take something else, I'm sorry, it's going to have to go to them. So he said, no, no, no. What do you have? Ilio called every winemaker that he knew in Niagara, said, I've got a great place for Merlot. I've got a great vineyard for this. Sold 85% of the man's farm to secure the Syrah.
Wow.
But that's also not the stupidest thing.
That is only the second dumbest thing we did to make this wine.
So the dumbest, that same wine from 2012, I was pregnant with my second child.
Mm-hmm.
I called Ilio and I said, guess what, Ilio? We're going to have a baby tomorrow.
They were inducing. Right. She had an appointment.
Yeah.
So, and the first thing he should have said was, that's amazing. Instead, he said, what time?
Oh, no.
And I said, first thing in the morning. He says, I'm pressing the Syrah. And we're using somebody else's equipment. I can't move that. You know, I can't, I have to be there. So I drove myself to the hospital.
Yep.
Getting a speeding ticket along the way. Because he did not believe me. No. I had a baby. I had other stuff to do.
No, but
I
wasn't like gonna... when the cops wave it?
No, he didn't believe me.
Oh.
In fairness, it was like a bad like rom-com movie. Nadia said, because I saw her about an hour later, and I was like, well, yeah, didn't you talk your way out of it? And she's like, well, in fairness, like I rolled down the window and I was just laughing.
Yeah,
at the cop.
And she's pulling me over.
Exactly. And we were like, well, that's probably not a good idea. She's like, I just couldn't believe it. It was like a bad movie. And she's like, I was just laughing the whole time. And then he's like, sure, you're going to the hospital.
So, okay. So you get to the hospital. Is induced? Did they have the baby?
He was there. He was the first person to see our son, Ruslan. And we've got a whole bunch of that wine waiting for, you know, when he turns 19, Ontario.
We go to Alberta.
When he gets married. We're Manitobans.
Yeah.
this is a wine that we're really truly proud of. When we were just first starting, we were doing barrel samples of this wine to get people excited. So really, really lovely. And this is from that easy, great 2020 vintage. So just beautiful red fruit. There's, you know, it, like I like to say, it's like Shiraz, but not. It still hits you over the head with a mallet like Shiraz will do. But in reality, that mallet is covered in flowers. So you don't mind quite as much. There's beautiful lavender. There's beautiful white pepper on the nose. Like, give me a peppercorn steak and a glass of this and I am in heaven.
The pepper is there. You're right. This the velvety power of this wine. And so, no, hold on though. Which was the vintage where you were, you got the spin ticket?
2012.
20.
Also like 20. Yeah. Big, great vintage.
Yeah, yeah. 2012. That's
honestly, our children are all from vintage years in Niagara. So they are 2010,
yeah.
2012,
yeah.
And 2016 are our three children. So
that is hilarious.
They are literally vintage years. So
well, your one child will be drinking the 12 when they're at therapy, wondering why dad
but
wasn't
there's
there.
There's no more vintages coming out of this
one. I was going to say 24, no. You know, it was a good... All right.
No, 2016 was the last great vintage in our family.
the Keyson Vineyard. I haven't heard of it. What do I need to know?
So they are really neat spot. So they are not on the bench side. They are the other side of Highway 8, but in Beamsville. Actually, if you've ever heard, I'll shout out to our friends at Black Bank Hill, Taylor and the guys. So this vineyard is, I feel like even if we had a little bit of inspiration for them, then I'll take even a tiny bit of credit because this vineyard is literally next to Black Bank Hill and the specific Syrah vines are actually the ones that come down. It's the vineyard south of their building, and the back of those kind of come to the back of their building. So it's literally kind of where the Black Bank Hill building is, and these vines are sort of 15, 16 years older than that. So it's the neighbor. And weirdly, for some reason, there's a couple of young, really great growers in East Beamsville trying to recreate the Rhone, which is really quite funny, but it's true. There's like Black Bank Hill, there's Mio Vineyard, there's Kazan, and you know, these places have like Syrah, Viognier, Marsan. I don't know why, but weirdly, you know, East Beamsville does this cool thing, and that's what we're learning. The best thing about Niagara, I think, is that now we're getting so much better at choosing the little parts of Niagara that we're doing that. We're like, yeah, I know it sounds weird because there's like maybe 8 or 10 vineyards right here, but they do amazing, like Syrah and Marsan. Whereas ones over there do awesome Syrah. We're getting better at that. And that's what is making Ontario wine great. And that's what I was saying before about that fancy farmer's idea. Like, you know, you grow your ingredient. Like, there isn't really an, I know people say it's alcohol, you know, in beer, people don't, in the beer world, people aren't walking around going, so you think 2016 is like a good barley year? Like, what do you think? Like good hops? Like, yeah. Like, it's not a thing here. Even the most commercial wineries in the world, they grow their own ingredient as well as purchasing their ingredient. It's 95% grape.
One time a year.
Once a year. Yeah. I always have thought about that even the most commercial wine you can think of, like Yellowtail, in my head, I'm thinking, yeah, but you know what they do is they literally bring in, again, tens of thousands of tons, and yet they build an entire winery, not because it's cheaper, to bring in fresh grapes one time a year so they can make this beverage at a really cheap price. And all the automation and all the and the crazy, and like, it's not a lot of people, it's kind of commercial, but it's to bring in fresh grapes. Because fundamentally, wine is a certain kind of beverage in a way that other things just aren't.
Like, it really is stupid from a business side.
Yeah, yeah.
It really
is.
Why
would you just freeze dry grapes?
Yeah, exactly.
But the reality is because wine is a particular thing in a way that other things aren't. You can't just order up a skid of your ingredient. Even, like, I think even Yellowtail or, you know, I think, or the most commercial, like E&J Gallo White Zinfandel, they built an entire winery in Central California that does 50 million cases or whatever stupid number to make one wine for fresh grapes. That is not smart when you think about it. Why don't they just, like I said, freeze dry grapes or something? It's because wine has to be made from fresh grapes fermented. That's See, fundamentally different than anything else.
Oh yeah. Oh no. And hey, after you start a winery, well, do I get to sell my product to make money? No, you let it sit.
Oh, well. No, then you hang on to it. And actually, that might be the dumbest thing we did a couple of years ago. Is Nadia and I had a board meeting and we sat down and we're like, you know what? So a bunch of our entry level wines and stuff, like, those are selling really well. And so, like, I have an idea, but it's like really expensive. I would like to actually, like, do I have to release all our top wines at the same time, like always at the same time, like all our Pinots, like all our 21 Pinots? Or can we like taste them and then release them when we think they're ready?
Right.
Which is the most expensive way to do it.
That is. That,
and
that
then
is.
Nadia was like, again, you know, she...
Banker.
Banker, but she, again, I've been indulged a lot in this whole thing. And she really said, you know, I think that that totally fits in the philosophy that we do here. I think that's exactly what we should do. And I'm not sure every spouse slash business partner would be on board at all with that.
Started about trust.
So that being said, I've also done some silly things where I make ridiculous demands. Mm-hmm. I came to him one time and I said, you know, I would like to make sparkling wine. And he said, yeah, 2016 just isn't the year. It's not the year. It's not the year. So then the start of 2017, I started kind of joking around about it. I said, listen, I'm going to serve you with divorce papers if you don't do sparkling this year. And I was about, I said first, I was 99% kidding, 98%. And he, by about like 75%, he kind of got the hint. And we made sparkling wine. So that's not because... it's not a quick turnaround, but like, I want everybody to feel that that is not the way we make decisions about wine. We want to make the best fucking wine that we possibly can. And whatever it takes, it takes.
I want to shit talk at least one of these, but I can't yet. Like, I really can't. Like, I love,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Like, I love that Syrah, and like, I'm, you know, there's some really good Syrah producers for me. I love Creekside, Cassaba. Those are like two of my favorites. And it's one great thing about when I'm staying in this area at Henry Pelham, I will sometimes finish my radio show. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to get in the car. What do I feel like? Do I feel like Merlot? Like whatever mm-hmm. grape I feel like, I can drive no more than 15 minutes. Now here would be a little bit longer, but like, you know, I can drive 15 minutes. It's better than an LCBO. I'm driving down a windy road deciding which vineyard do I want to get a bottle for dinner that
Life
night.
Life is hard.
No, it's not actually. That one is actually quite easy.
Yeah, and that, exactly. And that's why we always try and keep in mind when we're doing any of our kind of promotional things. So yeah, last but not least, we thought we would, again, get back to something that we think is just amazing in Niagara. So we are obviously a Chardonnay and Pinot Noir producer. And I think especially West Niagara, like I try and explain that to people because internationally, like I'll give you an example. So I was just in Singapore basically, whatever, 5-6 weeks ago. And you know, some people, we are starting with literally like Niagara. So is that like near Niagara Falls? That's where you're starting.
Right.
And that's fair. That's totally fair. And I said, actually, yes. To make it even simpler for you, there's this big escarpment. It's basically a big shelf or like a big kind of thing, but not to make it too complicated, but Niagara Falls falls off of the Niagara Escarpment. That's literally why there's a falls. Oh, okay. To put it in a little bit better context, we're kind of like a New World sideways Burgundy, sort of. Yeah. We're kind of rolling hills. There's one shelf. It's all limestone. Okay, pretty simple. That's West Niagara. Niagara in the Lake is a very different thing. It's kind of big, wide, flat, a lot more heat, beautiful. And I actually think that it's a long way of saying, I think Cabernet Franc might be the red grape for Niagara overall.
Even more than Pinot or Gamay.
So
after Pinot.
Pinot in West Niagara, number one. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole half of Niagara where I don't think it's the number one grape. That's what I mean. Like if you're talking about the whole region.
Right.
So I think in West Niagara where we are, we're a cooler spot. I think Pinot is top dog. But if you're saying the whole region as a whole, the neat thing about Cabernet Franc is it can make these amazing, powerful, full-bodied, rich wines. Or it can make really delicate, perfumey wines. And it can do that from end to end. So,
the perfume is here on this, by
the way. Yeah, and this one is, again, Grimsby Hillside. So again, not us, but you know, kind of across the street from us. A great vintage. And I think that that is what really makes Cabernet Franc interesting, is that it can cover pretty much any part of Niagara. I truly believe if you want to, can make great Cabernet Franc. Whereas Pinot Noir might be, in my mind, the top dog as a grape variety, but you have to be more choosy with your vineyard. Does that make sense?
Whereas yes.
Cab Franc is, and in fairness, the one revolution in our industry is we have started to pay attention to that. Cabernet Franc now for probably about 5-6 years is the number one planted grape variety, red grape variety in Niagara. People don't realize that. We have listened to, for the first time, instead of sort of, you know, asking people what they want in wine, we've started to say, hey, what grows well here? Well, again, about the fancy farming thing, right?
Yeah.
What grows well here?
I think that was a problem ages ago, like in the 90s or stuff, when you would see, you know, a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon. I was like, why are you planting that? It's like, well, it's the number one grape. That's the one everyone knows. I'm like, I know, but
we thought people want.
Yeah, but you might want it, but you're not going to want it in, you know, where it's stocky and green. And, you know, and this is the much better way of doing it. It's like, what works best, and people will come.
Because, you know, in the end, again, maybe it seems so simple that it seems almost, I don't know, trite or something, but we always said, you know what people really want is they want good wine. They want good wine, honest wine, wine with a sense of place. And if you keep that as your focus, then I think, you know, I think that's where you really win a lot of fans. And then quality, I know, weird thing to say, but quality is almost easier to focus on because you're already starting at the base where the thing works well.
Last question for you guys. We have gone over an hour and 10 minutes. So I will be splitting this up into two parts. In fact, anyone listening to this right now, this is Leaning Post part two. It's like Empire Strikes Back, but with Cabernet Franc. I saw this one quote: property included an abandoned vineyard and barn that could only be restored by crazy youths, as we've discussed, with more passion than brains. Would you say your brains have caught up with your passion when it comes to wine?
Oh, that's a hard thing. The passion's still there.
Big profound question to end.
So for us, it was just about making it work. The brains, we've learned a lot over the last couple of years. And I just, as an entrepreneur, you need to, you're like, the printer's not working, the IT, the number of things that you need to learn, the breadth and the brains that we've built over the last 15 years, it's crazy. Had I known what I would have needed to accomplish to get here, maybe I wouldn't have done it. So I'm glad I didn't know back at the time, because I couldn't imagine if we were still sitting having the pillow talk about what we wanted to do. It's about what we did and what we accomplished. Sorry.
No, listen, you're supposed to be emotional about this. This is your life. I mean, this is your life. This, you started with this when, before you had the full family, and it's a risk. You didn't have these crazy backers. You didn't have some company spotting you $500,000 to get you going or anything like this is your own blood, sweat, and tears. It's an incredible legacy, but it's not a legacy yet because you still have, you know, the story is not even close to being told yet.
No, absolutely. And we always say that the thing about the wine business generally, honestly, is every other way is easier to make money. That's what I try and tell everyone. Literally every other way. But if you are truly passionate about it, then when it's your passion, you find a way to make the economics work. Does that make sense? Like you love this thing, and then some way you use that, you know, the economic brain to make it all work and put it together in a way that works for you, but just not the other way around. That's the only way we can think of it.
And you do this because you couldn't imagine yourself doing anything else.
Yeah.
That's what drove us. That's what keeps us getting out of bed every single day. It's what's the new adventure? I'm done with telling people that my life is crazy. My life is full.
Yes.
It's pretty fucking cool too.
I love it. Honestly, and yeah, you could have done something else. You would have made more money, could have had a nicer car, you know, maybe more square footage in your home, but you wouldn't have been happy. It is a cool sense that, like, what you guys are doing, because you guys are also contributing to other people being happy. They buy a bottle, they had a great time here, they open that bottle 6 months later, it brings them joy, and, you know, you guys play a small part in that. That's pretty fucking cool.
No, and that's been the fun part, is that's what we've come around to, is, you know, we are still fundamentally, and I think we're farmers, but we're also in the hospitality business. And I think that's something we knew early. And I think in a way, maybe some winemakers or wineries sometimes forget that. I mean, we really, really made a point, like a great example. We opened our tasting room. The first people we hired, they're huge into wine. Honestly, everybody who works here, we take that really seriously. There's no point in working at Leaning Post if you're not really into wine.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. Now, different levels of knowledge, that's a different thing. But if somebody comes in and they say, you know, like, what do you think about wine? I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, this is not the place for you. Yeah. The place for you, like, we want people who live, I mean, unfortunately, live, eat, breathe wine and think it's the most amazing thing in the world. And then we've got something to work with because that's us. Maybe some days that's a little intense for some people, but it's kind of who we are and we got to be us and we got to be real about it.
And the other thing I want to highlight, one of the things that was so important to us when we were doing that pillow talk at the beginning is what do we want that experience to feel like for people? We like to say we take the wine really seriously. We don't take ourselves seriously at all. We want people to come in our home. You come down the driveway, you come right past our home. We want that to want this experience to feel like you're coming in to a trusted friend. And we take wine knowledge really, really seriously. I want people to come, have a wonderful experience, maybe learn something, but not in a threatening, pretentious way. It's about just really being true and real and loving wine. I mean, that's what we're all here for.
Oh God, yeah. We all love it because it's more than the wine. It's the story. It's your guys' story. It's geography. It's science. It's history. It's taking a chance. It's the human spirit, which might sound dramatic, but it is like it,
no, only some days.
Yeah, and some days not. All right, before we end, because I don't want to give the Cab Franc a short shrift. What are people getting? Your thoughts on your Grimsby Hillside 20 Cab Franc?
Well, again, amazing vintage. This is sort of the opposite of 21 in terms of a heartache. Honestly, the most amazing thing about Franc from our little neck of the woods here is you are getting that, like, you're getting all the perfume we were talking about. So earlier, like, you're getting beautiful. Again, you do have those kind of tobacco-y things, the leafy things. You have big fruit. You also have sort of a real, like, stony, gravelly thing. And what I really love is that this wine, again, for those of you who prefer fuller wines, I think Cabernet Franc in Niagara really delivers like true, like full bodied red, but yet it's not just fruity. So it's interesting. It's kind of both things. It gives you, if you want to do a steak and you want to do this full bodied, like you love your reds full on, Cabernet Franc is that, but it gives you, if you're more into wine, it gives you a little extra layer of a whole bunch of things. It's not just fruit and oak. It's this real powerful, interesting fruit and non-fruit concoction. And I just think it's really, really is kind of the top end for Big Red.
Guys, this has been so good. We're getting close to batch elder length, but we're not at batch elder length.
All right. Well, just before we get there, maybe we'll sign off then.
Ilya and Nadia, thank you guys so much for taking the time. Again, this is a beautiful portfolio of wines we tried, and it screams to you guys your passion and your work ethic. By the way, where do people go? Address, website, promote, where they want to find Leaning Post.
leaningpostwines.com and we're 1491 Highway in Stony Creek, Ontario.
Very easy to find. Thank you guys.
All right, thanks so much.
Cheers.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, Stitcher. Wait, I think Stitcher's gone. Everywhere else where there's a podcast, you'll find us. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.